everybody, and welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast.
Wow, that was great. This is Omar Barr, by the way. This is not me. People are probably like, what the hell happened to Tom?
This is not my real voice, just my stage voice.
Stage voice.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is the first live show that we're doing.
I'm very excited.
I'm super excited too, and a little freaked out. I don't like doing the first of anything, you know? It's like that resistance, like, should I?
I know I'm much scarier in real life in person than over the phone, but you'll be okay. You'll be okay.
Oh, I like that. But yeah, the reason we have you on, and we just spoke about this a little bit before the show, you went 7-8 figures in online courses in a market of 3.5 million people, which is ridiculous when you think about it.
Yeah, something like this. I wouldn't take the whole credit for myself because I was part of a group of people that kind of broke local records, maybe even world records, when it comes to selling online courses. But I come from Israel, which is 8 million people that lives in that country, very small country. The size of it is maybe the size of New Jersey. In terms of the amount of people who live in Israel, it would be...
That's around Chicago size.
Around Chicago, yeah. Ooh. Or New York City, like residents, like permanent residents.
That's true. So Imagine making 7-8 figures from an online course in Chicago alone.
Yeah, and it wasn't just one course. It was a series of courses in different topics. But once we kind of figured it out, each person brought their specialty to the table, then things just like took off very, very, very quickly. And I would actually, it would be interesting to share some of my insights.
Yeah, I'm super curious. How would that start off in the beginning? Like who came up with this idea of getting the courses out, and then how did you start testing and getting, you know, the word out there? Because it's such a small audience, you know?
Yeah, it is a small audience. Yeah. And what we said before I started recording is that I said it's 8 million people in Israel. But when we think about the target audience, it would probably be closer to like 3 or maybe 4 million people, because the Jewish population of Israel is around 80-something percent. And so all the non-Jewish audience is less than our target market. Although we do have clients that would be Muslim or Christian, but it would be usually more Jewish. Obviously, we don't try to market to people that are younger than
12.
16, 17. 16. I have a client that is like 16 years old, and probably his business is now making more money than mine. So I wouldn't limit that, but...
Isn't that a bit annoying, though? Like, when you see that, like, I just had my friend talk with me about that yesterday. He's like around 30 in e-commerce. And he's like, you know, I just seen, like, a 25-year-old kid sold his business for, like, $200 million. Like, isn't that just a little... Like, it gets you a little, right? Like,
it is annoying.
I think it's inspiring, too, but it's both, right? Like, it kind of, like... It's like this, like something that's poking you a little bit, like, you know, it's got that sting.
I don't feel it. I'm so proud of that. Like seeing somebody at 16 got their life together.
No, it's not that part. It's just like, damn, like I should have done that too.
I should, but I learned some other things and I was able to pass this knowledge to that generation when I said like those 16-year-olds and making money online, selling
courses. That's amazing, right?
Things.
It's amazing.
But yeah, it really makes me proud. And like, then... But basically what I take from this is like, what's your excuse?
That's the thing, right? Yeah. And that's what I always ask myself.
This guy has to fight his parents so he doesn't need to go to high school so he can go every day to the office and manage his sales team and manage his marketing team. And like, I need to, I don't know, like fight with the waiter at the coffee place to get an extra piece of sugar or something like
that. Yeah, that's hilarious.
You know, if it's your problem, kind of perspective. So it's quite a small audience. I would say something like 3 and 4 million.
It's interesting. Like if you broke those numbers down, it's like you got a couple of dollars out of every single citizen in the country.
Wow. I would imagine. Probably a lot. Like if we're going to be doing the numbers of how many courses I was involved in sold in a period of time of almost 3 years. Then it's probably 8 figures.
Yeah, it's super impressive.
Yeah.
So how did you guys start out?
So basically, I had my online course. It was on Facebook advertising.
Mm-hmm.
I created something like 4 years ago, and I marketed that. And by doing this kind of thing, I got exposed to other people also doing online courses.
Okay.
Three years ago, I was invited by a colleague of mine to be an affiliate in a product launch. It was a course on how to start your own agency. And
in Israel,
yeah, in Hebrew. And basically I was like, yeah, I'll be an affiliate. And I usually in the product launch, the affiliate would email their list. So mm-hmm. I had a list. It wasn't such a big list. It was maybe several thousand people. I emailed my list, but I also want to get, you know, the extra edge on the other affiliates. So I started doing Facebook ads for product launches. And usually it wouldn't really make sense, but back at the time, Facebook advertising was very cheap.
Right.
And not a lot of people did it. So I was able to kind of like pick the low hanging fruits.
Yeah, you leveraged that back then, yeah.
Yeah, by just advertising to the audience. I think even that guy gave me his email list. It was like, yeah, target them on Facebook.
And like do a lookalike or something.
Target them.
Just target them. Because 4 years ago you could just put the emails up and get the list, no problem.
Even,
yeah.
Even today you could do it, but people would share their audience.
Their list.
Like, yeah, you can just steal all the sales that would have come from my list anyway. Because he wanted the exposure. A lot of times when you do affiliate launches, you don't do it just for the money. You get a lot of affiliates lined up to really get the market to talk about you. And that's maybe one of the first advantages is that in a small market, when a lot of people promote you at the same time, you get the superstar status very, very quickly.
Very quickly, yeah.
Because everywhere you'll be seen, everybody will hear about you in a very, very short period of time. So actually, the first time I did it was not that specific launch. It was mm-hmm. maybe before. I invested something like $500 to promote this SEO course, and I made $2,000 in affiliate commissions. And then a month later, some other person started a launch. It was the agency, that specific how to start an agency. I took those $2,000 and turned them into $5,000. And then
you had the buyer's list too.
And I had the buyer list, and I had my own list, and website visitors, and audience that I knew that would be interested. And then somebody comes to me and tells me, hey, there's this thing called Amazon FBA, and people are just killing it. They make businesses, and it's like super automated, and you can basically, it's the new gold rush.
Yeah.
You need to get on the Amazon thing, babe. And it sounds like bullshit to me. Like, I couldn't like wrap my head around the idea that people are making those very, very easy Amazon businesses.
Back then, yeah.
Back then, it was 2000, the beginning of 2016.
Yeah, so Chiang Mai was turning from dropshipping to Amazon FBA.
Yes,
like it was, because this place goes crazy about just one thing. Like last year was crypto. This year, I'm not sure what's going to happen yet, but it's always something.
Cannabis
stuff. Okay. Always something. We're on the extreme every single year.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, I'm going to take this leap of faith. I put $5,000 to buy, like aside to buy ads.
Did you make your own course on Amazon FBA or someone else did that?
No, this is again somebody else's launch. I was the affiliate.
Oh, man.
And I already, you know, every one of those launches, I got more audience. I had my list got bigger. I got myself a name as a Facebook advertiser or an affiliate because people kept on seeing me on the number one on the affiliate competition. And then I put $5,000 on promoting this thing, getting like $1 leads or something that would be ridiculous. And I remember it was the last day of the launch, like car closes, we all hang out together. And that day I keep on like, during the whole launch, I get some like a sale here or a sale there, but just that day, every like half an hour, I get another sale and another sale. And
it's
another
sale. The end.
And in the last hour, I think I got something like 15 sales to affiliate. So it ended up being almost like $20,000 in affiliate commissions just from those $5,000. And that thing just basically, it's like my mind was like blown, because you really had to like hustle to make money, especially in the beginning of your business. It wasn't like, oh, I just buy some ads and, you know, get some commissions, and then somebody else needs to take care of all the problems. And I think that day was one of the biggest mindset shifts, that I realized that it doesn't need to be hard necessarily,
right?
But it needs to, like, if you do it right, you can sell a lot of your courses. Especially if it was like more in the opportunity market kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So most of our success with selling online courses were actually in the BizOp, you may call it.
Uh-huh.
But for us, digital nomads are just like regular businesses. So how to start your agency, how to do like Amazon FBA, how to do a dropshipping store, day trading, the stock market. In recent years, we do more of like, I don't know what would be the best translation, more like a personal finance kind of a thing. So
okay.
Teach people how to save money and get out of debt.
Oh, yeah.
And basically build their wealth this way. We see those kind of courses are
like Ramit Sethi's.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't remember the name of his, but
I'll teach you to be rich.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. So these kind of courses sell really, really well because the audience of it is huge. Basically, every person that has
doesn't have money,
and people that do have money want to learn how to better manage their money.
So you've made most of your cash from affiliate.
Yeah. So from affiliate, but the reason that what I started doing, like buying ads to promote the launches, was kind of radical. And the techniques that I developed kind of brought a lot of other people. So today, if somebody wanted to launch their product, they would get affiliate lined up. They would bring maybe 200,000, 300,000 of their own money just to buy ads to promote their own product. So email lists are important, but if you want to hit like seven figures in revenue for one specific launch, email lists would not be enough. Even if you have everybody on your email list in that specific country, it would not be enough, because we can drive so much more traffic from Facebook or from Google or from Outbrain, Taboola, or any other platform than just email by itself. So basically, we go all out. We buy every little square of advertising we can find around the web, even all off the web as well.
Like
street signs sometimes. Yeah, billboards, radio commercials, television spots. Like, you want to get your name out there, and especially if you have a lot of affiliates promoting you at the same time, then you create this buzz where the whole country is talking about you for a couple of weeks.
So that's a little easier, I think, with a small population then. Because, you know, getting a country like the US, for example, the whole country to talk about you, like a 250,000 would not even put a dent into that, you know? Like,
yes, but then you see somebody, for instance, like Donald Trump, or I'm going to give two examples.
Yeah.
The two marketers that I really look for, I like to be inspired by today, which is Donald Trump and Elon Musk.
Dude, Elon Musk, man, his episode on Joe Rogan just blew my mind. Well, with Trump, he's a good marketer. I'll give him that.
So Donald Trump can make a whole nation talk about him by just one tweet.
Well, it does help that he's president now.
Yeah, but even before he was a president.
Before, his tweets would maybe get 30% of the nation riled up. Which is still huge.
That's the hyperactive crowd. He would get some people excited and maybe the other 70% to hate him. But that guy is just, he's a pro or an artist when it comes to like free PR. That so sometimes, true. If you work in a big country, you can leverage big like free PR. And even if you're, let's just say we're trying to target the whole world, and obviously your course or somebody else's course would not get the whole world talking about it. But if we try to choose it one specific segment,
yeah,
or one specific market with several million people, you can get everybody to talk about you.
Hmm. Yeah, that's definitely doable. Like, I'm just thinking from the perspective of, you know, so when someone's listening and they hear these numbers, like, oh, that's why he's doing it, 250,000. Like, how could someone else replicate that with, let's say, normal budget, you know? Like, a lot of people don't have budgets that big to invest in online courses.
So leveraging affiliates, that would be the first thing. Especially in online courses and online launches of online courses, where a course can sell for $1,000, $1,500, $2,000, you can pay your affiliates. You can pay them very, very generously.
Because
there's very little expenses or direct expenses on online courses.
That's true,
So if you sell the course for $2,000, what stops you from paying $1,000 commission for affiliates?
Yeah, nothing really. And that's the one challenge that I've had with people that I've been coaching, is getting their prices up.
Yeah.
You know, people are charging too low. Like, there was a meetup here the other day. I just didn't go because I didn't want to say anything rude at the meetup. But someone was trying to get people to do courses on Udemy.
Yeah.
Right? Which I'm like, really? Like, you know, do you devalue your course? You get like a dollar from, you know, you have no list. Like, it's completely pointless.
If that's your kind of like go-to market strategy of testing the market and see if there's
testing, yes,
yeah, testing
yes.
Great thing,
yeah. But he was saying just to, you know, build your business and put the courses
but,
out.
But Udemy was probably good for online course owners back in 2010.
Yeah, so back then I got the, you know, but it's still not building a business. It was just, you know, more for market testing, getting leads into a real course. But even the courses I'm seeing sold now. Like, there was a guy on a podcast, huge following. Like, the episodes were downloaded like crazy when he shared it, right? He is helping people bring comedy into business talks, which is a fun topic, right?
Nice.
His, you know, CEOs, things like that. Guess how much he's trying to sell the course for?
$79?
You got it. That's exactly how much he's trying to sell it for. I don't know how you guessed that, but... Yeah, $79. And I'm like, dude... It was lower before. 79 was
I already doubled the price, you know, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, but the thing is, like, I'm like, even if you do Facebook ads, which are not as cheap anymore, you know, and they keep going up, you're going to have a hard time just breaking even on $79.
Yeah, it's kind of like the $37 ebook myth. You know, we all learned that you want to start an online business, then build a blog, start getting like free SEO traffic that will take you a year or two just to get enough traffic to even build an email list. Then just put a $37 ebook on that website and you can live the good life in Chiang Mai or retired with your passive income.
Yeah, guys, question everything.
And also, I think that's very interesting with Udemy and Skillshare and not a lot of those other. It's called MOOCs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Massive Open something.
Yeah.
Courses. That we're at the edge or the end of the information revolution that started pretty much in the beginning of the year 2000, where, you know, Google, first of all, the internet, and then companies like Google and Yahoo start basically giving each person in the world access to all the information. So there's not, I'm sure, like, the majority of the people today in the world have access to almost all the information that exists, will exist, or created in the past.
Like,
information is not even a commodity, because no information is really worth a lot of money. Like, you're trying to sell your course, all the information you create in your course is out there somehow.
So for the most part,
For information by itself is almost worthless.
Yeah.
But we're kind of moving towards a different kind of economy. We're moving more into the experience and the transformation economy. So people are not paying for information anymore. When you buy a book today, you don't buy it for the information. You buy a book because you're expecting to have some sort of, of an experience or some sort of transformation. And I'm going to give you an example. If you look at one of the best transformational or experience phenomena, we can look at CrossFit. People don't go CrossFit because they're going to learn anything that they cannot find on YouTube. You want to snatch, you want to deadlift, you want to do keep-in pull-ups, you want to do any one of those exercises. Going to YouTube, you're probably, there's more hours of video than you'll be able to watch all of your life.
That is true.
But people join CrossFit because they want to be part of a community.
Right.
They want to be transformed. Like if I was kind of didn't really have good posture, I didn't have confidence in myself, I never had this like competitive edge. You go into CrossFit and within 3 months you're a different person.
You're also injured.
And also from having like really, really bad form.
I always say like that's the two things people go to CrossFit for is one, community, two, getting injured. But it's true. No, the experience.
And they charge a premium because basically, if you look at the regular, like your normal CrossFit box, it would be like the most disgusting gym you can probably think of. Like no air condition, everything is covered with grease. Like basically, no one machine. Everything is just like barbells and weights. But the transformation is so strong that people would pay a premium on that. And they would pay, I think somebody from Australia told me he pays almost $200 a month just to go to CrossFit.
Yeah, it's not cheap. It's not cheap. Yeah. But when you mention like, you know, like a gym with no air conditioning and grease, you know, there's some bros listening to this like, yeah, that's a men's gym. That's what that sounds like, right? Like there's a lot of gyms, like the gold gyms with like the open ones.
But girls go there because they want to.
This is what's so different, right? Like I guess percentage of girls at CrossFit, there's no other gym, not even close, other than like a Zumba class or something. But you know, there's no other gym, which is incredible. And it's a bit cultish too.
Yes, for sure.
You know, which is interesting, you know, building a cult around this fitness, you know, it's great. It's like ClickFunnels. You know, who would have thought funnels would need a cult?
Exactly.
But it's huge. It's insane.
Landing page builder, not even like a...
That's not even a proper one.
Yeah, but people buy the experience.
Yeah.
Like, even going to conferences. Why would you need to go to a conference somewhere around the world where you can find all the information of all the speakers? We just came back from DCBKK.
Yeah, it's basically it's an experience.
2 days ago, I got all the presentations. All those talks I didn't have the time to go to. Now I have it. But you go to for the experience.
It's true, you know, catching up with friends, experience. But yeah, I get that. Like, we've spoke with a couple people on the show already. And the one thing that I keep saying that, you know, the main thing that makes a course successful versus a not successful course is the successful one is actionable. That means I'm going to take you from somewhere A to point B, somewhere from, you know, to something. Like, you're going to have 1,000 Instagram followers now or... make $1,000 or something, that's something that will sell. But if you start putting like, you know, a guide to the celiac disease, tips, hacks, and you know, whatever, like people don't give a shit. People don't want information. And anything that's an encyclopedia of information will fail. You gotta have an actionable, but that's a big difference too. And with people that create courses, sometimes if I just reposition things, you know, like, I can talk about this one now because it'll come out before this podcast is out. But I just had a guy that I'm working with, and he's a China negotiator. Right? And he's like, hey, Tom, I want to do a course on China negotiation. I was like, who gives a shit? But if you do one on how FBAs can survive and thrive in the trade war, you might be onto something. You know, obviously, we can still play with that. But just if you target the FBAs and this thing happening now, which you have experience in because you're the China negotiator, now people will perk up. No one wants to learn about China negotiation. That's boring.
Yeah.
You know, but if you can make it actionable, like I will help you fix your blind spot in this, you know, which could be getting a new supplier or whatever, right? But yeah, so, you know, he's getting a lot of attention now. and this course is coming out.
Yeah.
But it was just repositioning and making it actionable.
Yeah, I totally agree. And if you want to charge a premium on your course, if you don't think you don't find a way that you can charge $1,000 or $2,000, even $5,000 for your online course, then you need to change your mindset, because it's not about the information. A really, really good or expensive course would not have a lot of information. If anything, it would have a very, very little amount of information. People would pay a lot of money for a course with just 1 hour, 2 hours, or three hours of actionable content and all the little shortcuts basically help you achieve and build an experience and think about how this course would transform people. Sell people the transformation, and you can charge whatever you want. Sell them the information, and you basically can charge as much as your average course in Udemy, basically.
Yeah. Do you know Anton Crowley? No, he's in the DC too.
Dropshipping lifestyle.
Yeah. So about 2-3 years ago, he was here, and he gave me the login to his course. He's like, check it out, Tom. Just, you know, and I'm like, dude, you're brilliant. The course was maybe 15 minutes, but it was only actionable stuff. Like, you know, from the beginning till end, this is how you become a dropshipper, find a supplier, market, bam. Then he created a conference like a couple blocks from here. People came in, like 400 or 500 people going nuts.
Yeah.
Then you got half of them working as affiliates. The course was selling for 2 G's. Half of Chiang Mai was either buying or selling the course. But I'm just saying, like, the course was, like, it was tight. There was no fluff at all. Like, maybe 8-9 modules, 6 to 8 minutes each.
Yeah.
And when I watched one, I was like, there was no, like, you know, this is what dropshipping is. Like, it doesn't matter. You need to find a supplier. This is the kind of supplier. This is how you're going to validate the product. It was just super tight. But he had $2,000. And if he spent, what, $700-$800 on an affiliate, he doesn't give a shit. He's making $1,000 for nothing every time he sells it.
Yeah.
And I thought that was like the best example of that I've seen.
And also a very good example of transformation. Like, he takes people that have a dead-end job,
yeah,
or, you know, stuck somewhere in their office job or their day-to-day business or something that is boring, and gives them, sell them on the idea of becoming a dropshipper and being able to wear it from anywhere in the world. And then when you come and price this course, you know, he gives people freedom. What is the price of freedom?
Yes, this is why it was brilliant. But it's so hard to getting that across to a lot of people, yeah, you know, that are course creators. Because I'm like, look, like with the China negotiating guy, he's like trying to sell it for $200-$300, and I'm fighting him. I was like, how much do you think an FBA's business is worth to him right now? He's making $1 million in revenue. About 200K is profit, and it's all about to go to shit. How much do you think that's worth? Is it $200?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he's like, oh, I don't know, will anyone buy it? You know, that type of thing. And I'm like, dude.
And if you struggle to think how your course can actually help people, then that's probably a good time to stop developing that course. Because if you just want to give people information, then just search Google the right keyword and give them the link to that thing. They can find all the information, all the articles
that they can find.
And there was better articles, better organized. Like, their information is probably better than your information, if you only look at that information.
Yeah.
I got inspired by this guy named Ross Rufino. He's kind of classic internet marketer.
I haven't heard of that.
He does high ticket selling, and he's all about transformational programs.
Really?
And he gives really good example. So a lot of the folks he works with are coaches, consultants, and so maybe one of your audience is one of them. So I'll use one of that example. So let's imagine you help people save their marriage. Okay? How much is saved marriage worth? How much is saving your marriage worth?
Especially when you don't have a prenup.
Especially if you don't have a prenup. Prices?
You could probably put a price on
that. No, you cannot put a price on that.
Depends who you're talking to.
You cannot put a price on that. You can know how much would it cost you to pay in case you get a divorce and you need to get lawyers and all those kind of things. But the trauma that your kids were gonna have once you're divorced.
Once you have kids, see, if you put that in, like, you know, how much
you're trying to be too rational, but there's no price to that. And if you had you have an idea, you have this dream of having a business that will allow you to travel the world. What is that? What's the price tag of that? Of achieving your dreams?
See, that when you start putting the dreams and like kids and things like that, like there's no price then. You know?
But if you're not going to those areas of people's life, then you're wasting your time because you're selling information. It goes back again to that kind of thing.
It's the copy part.
Yeah, so there has to be, I totally agree with Russ, like, obviously, you're doing something that changed people's life. If you're aware of it or not aware of it, you're helping people out. And if you're not sure about it, then stop developing your course for a couple of days, you know, and start going back to your audience and talk to them, maybe your past clients, and try to figure what transformation happened to them. My Facebook courses, in the beginning, I thought I'm going to teach people how to use the pixel and how to create ads.
But
you know what's the number one transformation that happened with people buying the course?
I would still say it's the freedom, because you can multiply your sales team really easily. So more money, less work.
Yeah. The thing we noticed, the thing I noticed people struggle the most and take out of the course, it's the idea of getting ROI. So if you can change people's mentality to it takes to money, like to invest money to make money, and looking on investments in business as an ROI kind of a thing, that's the transformation. It doesn't really matter if I'm gonna teach Facebook, Google, native advertising, or billboard advertising. If you have the mentality of ROI, of placing money first before you get results, and kind of like have this belief that you would get an ROI and work towards getting that ROI and improving your ROI, that's the biggest transformation. Because once you're open to advertise
to
make profit, then to make more revenue, to make more money, then everything opens up and you employ people by looking for ROI. You go into conferences looking into ROI. You're deciding, what podcast to go on by the ROI you're gonna get, or what presentation are you gonna give, or what's gonna be your next product, and a lot of areas in your business would completely change by stopping to think like somebody who's trades. You know, I buy this, I make this, I sell this, into an investor. I place this investment and I'm looking to get this kind of return over this amount of period of time.
Yeah, it's pretty big. When I even think about my SEO clients, and a lot of them I tell, we should do some PPC, just, you know, why not test it? Like, we should figure it out. They're like,
no, it's not free.
Yeah, it's not free. Like, I don't want to spend any money on that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but you have a list, and you have people going to your website, let's just remarket them. Let's just get them to come back and buy. Like, this is a warm, this is like the best traffic you can get. And still 50%, like, don't get that. You know, it's that ROI thinking, yeah, you're right.
And also, how many people would not put a dime on Facebook ads, but they would go and spam Facebook groups for hours and hours?
Yes.
You know, for like 10 free clicks, while all my competitors or people do that, I just put an ad, target the kind of the people that I want, and go and do some other things.
That is true.
Manually work and publish, or, you know, sometimes money, investing money to save yourself time is worth a lot more than just spending time.
Especially if you can get the right audience, right? Yeah. With the groups, it's a little tricky now, because, you know, there's a lot of pretty big groups that you cannot target, and I've seen this, you know, it's getting harder and harder to target the right groups. So sometimes it is worth of having a strategy to go in somehow into that group and start pulling people out.
Yeah, I agree. But that would be very strategic.
That's very strategic, yes.
What kind of post, what kind of...
Yeah.
You're going to put a lot of effort into that, and if you do it once, do it twice, and you see you don't get any
results.
You're probably not going to do it again and again. yeah. just because it's free, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a like strategic, very yeah. strategic, you know?
And I also, this summer, I heard Ryan Dice in some conference, and then I heard something, I don't know if you knew it or not, that kind of like blew my mind. So he said that the conversion rates on his on their landing pages, mm-hmm. Digital Marketer, one of their brands. So on there's a lead magnet to download some PDF.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The traffic they get from Facebook, especially specifically paid traffic,
mm-hmm.
converts a lot better than their SEO traffic. And we always used to learn that like SEO traffic is the best traffic we can because people you can get because people are like searching very specific thing.
Yeah, it depends, I think. Yeah.
But Facebook becomes so smart these days that they send you people that they know that will convert. SEO is kind of like blind traffic. You can get a lot of SEO traffic, but only a certain amount of that traffic has the intention to convert.
I think this becomes a bigger problem as your brand grows. Because initially, no one's searching for your brand or your name, right? So they will go, how to market an online course, right? And those people are good traffic, let's say, for yeah. me. But the moment people start searching, oh, smart brand marketing, that could be anyone. Like someone heard like, hey, someone's good that's on the show, or did you hear about that show? And that could be not my traffic at all. And if they somehow come on the, you know, marketing course landing page, they'll be like, eh, I have an e-commerce store. You know, it doesn't make sense. So with Ryan Dice, because I've been to Traffic and Conversions, and that's a huge conference.
Yeah.
4,000 plus people when I went.
Yeah.
Which was still not like social media conference. It was like 10,000 people. But still, I spoke to some, right? And a few, like, didn't even know where they came. Like, their bosses just sent them. So I'm just saying, you know, like, when they're Googling, you know, like, and getting into the digital marketer space, they're like, they'll check out the landing page. I don't even need this. And two, there's people like me who will go on that landing page and be like, let me figure out the design and how they're getting the conversion so we can take those concepts and put it into ours.
Yeah.
So we also don't convert.
Yeah.
So that's why I think the Facebook traffic is probably higher converting for them.
It's also because of the pixel. Because Facebook would not send you traffic if they don't think that traffic is going to convert. Google's going to send you traffic. They don't care about. They don't really care about the conversion.
Well, no, with Facebook.
I'm talking about paid Facebook versus yeah. organic Google.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Well, when you say pixel, that means you're remarketing.
No, not remarketing. No, the conversion pixel.
The conversion pixel.
Yeah. So, for instance, I buy an ad and I send 100 clicks to this landing page to download some lead magnet. Facebook would wanna have all those 100 people to convert.
They would.
Not necessarily happen. Sometimes it's 70%. Sometimes it's 60%. It also depends on your landing page. But they want you to get as many conversions as possible, because if you don't get conversions, you are not gonna keep on buying their ads. But Google, they send people to that landing page because it's the best place to find that information. But if I was sitting down and looking for ideas on making lead magnets,
mm-hmm.
and then I get to some landing page with this kind of thing, then you know I'm very, very relevant, but
yeah.
but not necessarily. So I can get it, especially if you think about the way that the Facebook algorithm works, that Facebook actually knows when you're gonna convert, what time of day is the best to convert. They're gonna know what device they should send to you. Like if you usually convert from desktop,
yeah.
then they'll wait for the time of the day where you're gonna be on your desktop, and all of a sudden you're gonna see the ad for the smart brand marketing.
Yeah, podcast. That's true. The only problem I have with Facebook, which you know I'm not as optimistic about them, because I've seen a lot of the articles and the lawsuits, how they
yeah.
you know inflate the numbers
yeah.
and often, like maybe if you're a brand like that, they might send you real traffic, but for a lot of smaller guys, they just send garbage, you know? And it also helps with someone like Digital Marketer. I think Ryan Dice is spending like 20, 30K per month. So they can really, yeah. So they can really get the,
a little bit more than
yeah,
that.
But I'm just saying at least,
yeah.
at least.
Yeah, please.
Yeah. So then Facebook has enough information to really figure out who converts.
It's the same with I think Google AdWords. I'm not really big in Google AdWords.
It's good for remarketing.
But there's this basically I forgot the name of this law, but basically there's like a natural maybe a moat. Basically, you need to spend more money to actually get a certain ROI.
Yeah.
If you start with $1 a day in Facebook ads, it would take you so much time to just even realize which one of the your ads are working. And especially now Facebook say, you know, you need to get as many conversion as possible but within the first couple of days, within this time frame.
Yeah, the low window, yeah.
Yeah, otherwise it's not really going to work. But Facebook, if their traffic would be shit, nobody would buy their ads. And
well, I do see switching going on. Like a lot of people are starting to remarket more on YouTube and on Google.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm seeing a lot of people go into Instagram more because it's cheaper than Facebook. Like I am seeing a bit of a movement. It's still big.
It's still Facebook.
It's still Facebook. But I am starting to see it. You know,
yeah.
I'm seeing the movement. Like people are asking about that stuff more and more.
And I think probably Facebook also would agree that just going one channel is not enough these days. And you see Facebook advertise on Google, and you see Facebook advertise on YouTube sometimes, and
yeah,
you see them doing SEO, and you see them doing things that is not necessarily the pure Facebook marketing that we think about.
Yeah, the interesting thing, like a buddy told me, he's a coach, and it did make me think a little bit. He said social media is the new internet, right? Like people don't really go on Google much anymore to look for things. Still a little bit, but not much. Most of the info we get, the 80% of it, you know, even without trying, is all from social media. Because even when I think of myself, like the amount of time I spend on Google versus, you know, just Facebook or Twitter, which I don't spend much, but it's still getting bigger than Google now.
Yes. Yeah.
The only time I'll go on Google is like if I have something really specific, like super specific that I can't find in a group, you know, or I can't ask, which is not much anymore.
Yeah, but that's your classical kind of like end of the information area.
It is, yeah.
Because you care less about information and you care more about social information acquired by social connections. Like if I'm going to get your recommendation on something or I would get a business tip from you because we already have some sort of relationship before, I'm going to place like a higher value in that than just finding that information on Google.
Yeah, it's super interesting, right? Like I've seen Facebook saying that they're starting to put 0 or 1 next to users, right? Based on the credibility.
Really?
Yeah. So I just posted a thing on Facebook saying, like, I wish that when people start posting advice for anything, like, you could see either they're, like, legit or clueless right next to it. Like, if Facebook just added that to it, right? So you're seeing, like, hey, what's the best, you know, whatever. And then you see some guy, like, talking all this stuff. It says clueless next to him. Like, oh, it's one of those guys. I just wish they made that public.
Yeah.
And those 0 ones, like, were visible. That would help so much, right?
Yeah, on specific, I think Facebook groups would even be good.
Dude,
you
would
get
be
so cool. many recommendations. And, like, and you would have, like, maybe some stars next to one another. Oh, he only have three.
But it's a 0 or 1, so I still think the legit and clueless will just get everyone, you know.
Now they do something I heard lately about the experience. And you would go into, you would see some Facebook ad to buying some, like, just say, podcasting microphone.
Yeah.
You would click that ad and go into the store and you would purchase that specific microphone and leave that store back to Facebook. And after several days, Facebook would promote like a little pop-up saying, hey, how is your experience buying in that website?
It's freaky.
Because the pixel basically fired the moment you bought something. So they know what you purchased, probably how much you paid also. And they want to make sure you got your product, the description of it was correct, and you got it fast enough, the shipping was good, the communication was good. And if one of those metrics are not by their standards, then they would make it harder for that specific advertiser to acquire more and more customers from Facebook. So if you think you can open some dropshipping store and sell people shit and you know, dropship that from AliExpress with a 45-day shipping time and things like that, those days are over, basically.
Well, I think Trump has killed them with the with the two things he's done, right? One is the trade war, the customs, and the second one is the mail thing, right? Like now Chinese are not getting the subsidy anymore, or will not.
Mm.
So before it cost them less to send something to America from China than it would from like one city in the U.S. to the next.
Yeah.
So the drop shipping that used to make sense, right? Because I can send this garbage to the U.S. for a dollar from China. Now it's going to be like $20 or $30 because it's going to be the regular price. So there, it just doesn't make sense. So things under 2 kilo will have that subsidy taken away. And that was the whole business model pretty much of dropshipping. Yeah, because how do you get it from China to the U.S.?
Yeah.
You know, especially under like a dollar or two.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's gone too. So he just killed that business.
And also, I think the whole dropshipping thing was kind of using like inefficiency in the market by the fact that most Americans don't know that there's a website called AliExpress.
Yeah, that was another thing.
You can order whatever you want, and they would get people very pumped, and also use all those like fake countdown timers or for 24 hours only. Like I saw this, I bought this bag a couple months ago. And then I saw this ad basically selling the same bag for free.
For free?
Yeah. Maybe I'll be able to pull out while we speak right now.
That's hilarious. But yeah, there was an inefficiency. And then the same thing happened with the FBAs, right? Initially, like people would come here, go to the markets, and just put everything they can on FBA and see if anything hits.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
That's it.
And it worked. Like 2-3 years ago, it still worked.
Yeah, it's called Nomadic. It's actually my travel bag.
That's a pretty legit bag.
It looks really, really legit, but then it sells for free.
Huh.
Yeah. And when you add it to your cart, obviously, you discovered you need to pay $11 shipping. But that bag's probably sold for like $200. So, obviously.
How did that happen?
I think they just knock it off.
I think it's a knockoff, yeah.
A Chinese factory to produce.
But it's still hilarious.
This obviously, if it wouldn't last for any, like just like any other trend, you know, it wouldn't last forever.
So are you still doing the marketing of online courses, or are you kind of moved on from that?
I still have my own courses that I sell.
Mm-hmm.
I sell more on autopilot. It took me a couple of years, but I set up this funnel that I don't really need to put a lot of effort. The ads are just same old Facebook ads I've been using for 2 years. Maybe once a month I'll go into the account, just make sure everything is okay. But it is autopilot. It's not the 4-hour work week kind of a thing. It does pay the bills and make some profit, but it's not really my focus these days.
Mm-hmm.
These days I work more on lead generation for real estate companies, investment firms, and financial services.
Okay.
I do sell several courses for my clients. So I do some consulting for people that want to build automated funnels, or they want to sell a lot of courses, basically.
So what sort of funnel in your mind works right now? Because, you know, they keep changing all the time. Like you have so many simple and then super complicated funnels, but in your experience, what is working now?
The more simple it is, the better it sells. Like I got trapped into the idea of like those super funnels with complicated like if this then that, and if it's Monday and the person's name is John, then send them an email with a shirt, like with this. Those things work, obviously, and you can get an increase in conversion, but people really get trapped in the idea that they need to make things complicated. What I think about funnel or automated funnel these days is give somebody a lead magnet of some sort and follow up with as many emails as you can. So, for instance, I want to sell a course on, give me a topic that would be interesting.
Let's say motorcycle driving lessons.
Okay, I want to get myself a driving license for Thailand, for instance.
There you go.
So obviously this is not going to be a high ticket course. This would probably be $100, maybe $200 max.
Right.
So I don't need to use very like the heavy guns to, you know,
to bless this one off.
Kill it to get make somebody buy $100. Like somebody can spend $100 online today after half an hour of getting to know you. That's usually enough. So I can do a lead magnet, maybe like a checklist with the 10 most important things you need to get done if you want to get your license in Thailand, for instance. So this would be a very easy checklist. Somebody would opt in to get this checklist. And obviously this lead magnet is hyper relevant to people that want to get their Thai license.
Right.
And not get arrested every time they drive around the city.
Yeah. Would you still recommend any something like a webinar or a masterclass for this type of sale?
For low ticket items, not necessary. So what I would do is give somebody the checklist on the thank you page. Basically have some sort of a video.
Mm-hmm.
And in this video, I would basically thank the person. Hey, thank you for downloading this good guide. If you download this guide, that means obviously that you want to get your license. So let me take advantage of the time that we have right now to give you some advice on how to get your license done as quickly as possible.
Mm.
And then maybe give like 10 to 15 minutes of really good training and knowledge about this topic, and help and show kind of like show the person that you know what you're talking about, and give them maybe practical tips that they can get done right now, like they can use right now. And then for the rest of the video, maybe another 5, 10, even 15 minutes, you can already sell them because you gave them enough content to begin with to actually go for the sale. Obviously, not everybody's going to buy half an hour after they just opt in or first saw your ad, but that would be a very good way to get the low-hanging fruits, like people that were maybe searching Google, or this pain point was the thing was very painful for them, so they want to get rid of it right now. So this basically is the content part of the funnel. And then I would start sending automated messages.
Right.
The first one would be, hey, thank you for opting in to get the checklist. Here is your link. I also created a special training on the best advice on this topic. Here's the link again.
Mm.
And if you're interested in getting your Thai driving license done very quickly, here's all the information on my special course that I created with a link to the sales page. And then in each one of the emails, what I try to do is give some content and have a call to action. So let me tell you the story of Joe. Joe came to Thailand in the year of 2015. He wanted to get a motorcycle and he started driving around. And every time he would drive around the city, the policeman would stop him and ask for some bike. And he got sick of that, but he didn't know what to do because he never had a driving license.
Right.
He actually met me, and this way I helped him get his driving license very easy. Now he saved so much money on fines. And
here's a picture of Joe. You have like Joe like smiling so hard. Yeah.
So like a success story.
Yeah.
Or maybe a historical story. Oh, this is how this and this did this and this in the past. And basically give good content. And if you send good content to like via email, it's not spam. If I send you very, very good advice on a topic that is close to your heart every single day, would you be thankful for me sending you those tips, or are you gonna be like hateful?
Annoyed? Yeah. No, I get that. That's why I was just wondering, what do you think works from just your experience now? Because I'm seeing very complicated stuff getting thrown on the market.
No need. But now after I have somebody's email and I send that initial couple of emails, and then I have some call to action, maybe deadline. You know, there's a discount that's gonna be gone soon, or I'm giving a bonus to everybody buying with this link. I can have maybe 100 emails on this autoresponder. Just every time you have maybe leading to other products, affiliate products, to some content on your blog, YouTube video, and just have a very, very long autoresponder. It can be even a year long. I have some, I know somebody that have a 2 year long autoresponder, and they add more and more and more. So we try to make like this like complicated, going from here and there and there and there. But just think about the fact that more important than trying to hit the person in the right time, is just being in their mind consistently, time after time. And in online businesses, in the online world, most of us are just afraid that we're going to buy from a business that would not be there in a month or two. But if I've been getting emails from you for 6 months...
That is true. This guy's persistent. He's not going anywhere.
And it sub-communicates that I'm a serious business owner. And it almost every like autoresponder service, every like email service provider would you can set up this autoresponder very quickly with almost zero technical knowledge.
No, that's true. That's true. So basically what you're saying is keep the funnel super simple.
But very long.
But the long list coming in. So you keep hitting this person for years.
Yeah, and then optimizing it, it's very easy. You go into this, let's just say we have a sequence of 10 emails.
Right.
And then I look at the emails and I see that the first email has 50% open rate. The second one has 40% open rate. The third one have 20% open rate. The fourth one have 30% open rate.
Right.
All of a sudden I say, hey, wait a second. I would like to see this as 30 and this is 25. This open rate is too low. What can I do? Change the subject.
I change
the subject. All of a sudden, the open rates goes up. Okay, now I can look at the click rate. I see that one of the emails has a very, very low click rate. That probably means that the content in the email is not good enough. So I would just change the content or have a more clear call to action. So very easy to optimize. And then the third way you can optimize is see if you, which one of the emails is bringing the sales. If there's an email that doesn't bring any sales, you can probably get rid of it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a different way of thinking of it too, yeah.
Yeah, and I tried everything. I tried sophisticated tracking thing and automated funnels that goes like a low ticket offer that goes into a high ticket offer and change into this kind of thing and like remarketing on Facebook only for the people that click on the... And I just realized that it might be more efficient, but it wouldn't necessarily be more time efficient for you to create it.
You know, the one thing I really dislike these days is the low tripwire in the beginning. And look, it worked pretty well before, you know, and it was, but these days when I see it, I more than cringe. Like, this is one of those things I just want to like destroy immediately.
Yeah.
You know, and I've seen people go, just because they have this in their mind from 2-3 years ago, you know, and they go from $7, upsell $159, upsell $4,000. And they're not getting any conversions or barely on those other two. And I'm, you know, I feel like you do realize it's the same effort of selling someone something for $7 or $150. That's about the same ball range, you know.
Yeah.
The $4,000, you're right. This is going to take a little more, you know, effort and they need to know you a little longer.
Yeah, so sell them like a consultation with you.
Yeah, but I'm just saying like that part I get. Like you don't want to sell that up front. No, you can't
just sell it up front.
You can, but it'll take a little more effort.
That might be a limiting belief in some way or another. Because
it's just from testing that I've seen.
Like when you go and buy like a very, very expensive car, like a Lamborghini, for instance. You don't buy the keychain of the Lamborghini, then the hat of the Lamborghini, then the shirt of the Lamborghini, and then basically you would be upsold all the way to actually have owned the Lamborghini.
Yeah.
No, you just, they created like good marketing to begin with and kind of try to position. And the way you sell Lamborghini is come for a test drive.
Yeah, no, I get that too, but just saying like for a lot of the products I've seen being sold, like that one deserves a little more, usually a call or something, right?
Yeah,
like, so I get that,
But a call is a tripwire, because basically, I also don't like the word tripwire, because we don't try to make people trip. Like,
yeah, the whole thing just gets me, you know.
Yeah, it's a low ticket offer. So,
yeah.
But basically what it is, it's some sort of commitment. And we can commit with our money and we can commit with our time. And sometimes, especially for business owners, committing with your time is a lot more valuable than getting somebody to pay you $7 for something.
I completely agree. Yeah. But I did find that those, I don't know if that's your experience, but those higher ticket offers, you do need something like a webinar or something a little longer upfront than just a checklist.
Yeah. So you can have like a video sales letter. So you, before I give you an example of how would I sell a low ticket offer, now let's talk about selling a very expensive.
Yeah.
So I would do the same thing, opt in to get some training or a checklist or a PDF.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the thank you page, either have a video sales letter of some sort, training versus plus like good content plus the selling part, or send people straight to a webinar. If you want to try to sell somebody on something that is more than $500, you're probably going to need to get them on a webinar or do some sort of a launch sequence, like video one, video two, video three, then a webinar, or then a card open. And you can do the webinar thingy, and once it's done and the sale after the webinar is done and they didn't buy, just keep on sending them great content, great emails, maybe some other offers, maybe attack the same offer from different angles, and have it as long as possible. It's even more applicable to high ticket items, because people can be sitting on the fence for months and years before buying from you for the first time.
That's true. But why would you send someone to a checklist first and not the webinar immediately?
So it could work. The nice thing about lead magnets, especially if you're a little bit price conscious about the price per lead, is the smaller the commitment, the lower the price per lead would be. If I give you, hey, download my quick and easy 7-step checklist to getting your online course launched, I would get a lower price per lead, and then I have this person's email, and I can just blast them with email until they're gonna attend the webinar or buy product.
No, that
if
makes
I
sense.
Tell you,
yeah.
Hey, sign up to be on a 3-hour webinar where I'm gonna drill your head with just tons of marketing messages until you're gonna buy. This person would probably be less likely to opt in or even to attend. So it's just about the price per lead. But I've also seen, I had clients that we would get like 40 cents, 50 cents opt-in for a webinar.
Yeah, so it depends. It depends.
It depends. You should probably test it out. And also people like to have something they can hold their hand. A checklist is really nice because, like, I'm going to have a checklist that I can print and hang on the wall.
That is true, yeah.
Like, I'm going to give you my best content for 1 hour and a half, for 1 hour.
Yeah.
Which people don't find it as valuable as a little piece of paper.
I agree. Omar, it's been an hour, so where can people find you?
I think the best way would probably to find me on Facebook. Most of my things are in Hebrew, so I wouldn't try to spell it and give you the thing. So it's Omer, O-M-E-R, B-A-R. I'm the owner of Facebook Marketing Lab. That's the name of my business in Hebrew. You can contact me on Facebook if you need any advice or would like to show me your funnel/online course, I'll be more than happy to take a look at that.
Awesome. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Before you go, let me know if you enjoyed this interview. Leave a review, subscribe, join the Smart Brand Marketing Facebook page, whatever is easiest. Also, if you need my help marketing your online course, or know that your business could use some SEO, come to smartbrandmarketing.com, check out the case studies, and reach out to me. Once again, smartbrandmarketing.com. Until next time.